Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
One more for Extension Jacks. I've come out rookie on the board. SP Futures down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 48. This is after a huge comeback yesterday and a very big down day in the morning, and we came back to be a little bit positive. Well, let me see what the cash actually ended up positive, because if you're in the business, all you do is watch the futures. Yeah, well, cash came back positive in the S&P, not so much in the NASDAQ, but yesterday we're up 417 in the Dow, up 30 in the S&P after being down probably 85. NASDAQ up was down 23 after probably being down close to 300, so it was kind of a massive comeback during the day, and everybody, of course, is, and some of the auto stocks came flying back too, even Ford and things, so somewhere, someplace, there had to be a rumor about tariffs being off, but it doesn't look like they're off, so how much do you think Trump's creatures are making on the rumors flying around the market, Colonel?
Oh, he's short.
But I mean, I think yesterday they got long. There had to be something creeping around.
This is the biggest challenge that the market has right now. This is the reason you're getting all these whipsaws. As I've pointed out since, he started making noise like this, if he actually means what he says he's going to do, okay, now this is, I know that's a big if, right? If he means what he says he's going to do, the legs of the K-shaped economy are going to compress considerably, all right? Because if you throw out all the people that are here illegally working and in one way or another scamming the system, all right? And they are. And I know, you and I have sparred about this a bunch. But the fact is that when you get down to it and you look at the programs that they access, they're not supposed to be able to, and things like this. Not everybody does. Not everybody. Yeah, it's like saying, well, if we make weed legal, there will be more people who drive stoned. Well, that's true. There will. Okay, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe the people will
come to Chicago. There's no maybe not.
Well, I but
you can't walk down the block here without getting high.
Oh, I get that, but the thing is this: I don't know, and this is, I did some contract work in New York a long, long time ago. Okay, we're talking 1980s stuff here, and I go into this little bodega thing. I wanted to get a beer to take back to my hotel, and the guy hands it to me in a paper bag with a straw.
There you go.
And I'm like, well, I'm the naive Midwestern guy, right? And I'm like, what's the straw for? And he says, you cannot have an open container and consume alcohol in New York City. The light bulb comes on, right? So open the container. It was a Foster's oil can, too, by the way. Open the container, stick the straw in the beer, and walk down the middle of Central Park with the beer in the paper bag. And by the way, right past about 20 cops, and not one word said, right?
Well, in the hood, the guys on the corner used to have their half pints in little paper bags.
Well, I figured it out pretty quick because, I used to have, little pints of Bacardi, right? So, I mean, I'm not stupid. It just took a minute for the light to come on. But the thing is that, like yesterday, all right, and again, this is all We had Musk running around. He's going to hand out $2 million checks to people who signed petitions in Wisconsin, and the Democrats in Wisconsin went bananas trying to sue to prevent it, saying that he was buying votes. He was not buying votes. The Supreme Court, they went all the way to the state Supreme Court, and they basically told the.
What do you think Democrats he was doing, Carl? If he wasn't buying votes,
I think he was doing the same kind of get out the vote sort of activity that all political parties do, and which is perfectly
nowhere. I tell you what, my view on America, and I'm kind of watching this race a little bit. If some bleep like him thinks he can buy my vote for $100, I'm voting for the other guy. If it's you,
well, yeah, I will vote for the other guy just to piss everybody off. All right,
I'm going to ask you something. Is there something wrong with him? Is he like?
Yes.
No, what I'm saying is he got some autistic going or some Augsburger? It's in some areas he's brilliant.
He's
clearly in some areas he's a blithering idiot.
Chief, he has explicitly said he's autistic.
He's what?
He's autistic.
Okay, that's what I meant. That's what I'm asking. I didn't know. I'd heard
he's absolutely autistic. Okay. I mean, if you've ever been around anybody that is or is an Aspie. Which is the polite way of saying Asperger's. It takes 10 seconds of watching the stuff he does to know that he's on the spectrum. There's no doubt about it. Then again, so was Einstein. So maybe we ought to be a little careful.
But there's a difference here. This guy is. I mean, I don't know. Trump, I have issues with, but this guy is certifiable, I think. But he's brilliant. But I have a real problem with him. I mean, I don't think he has a moral bone in his body. Is he amoral, or what is he?
So one of the things that frequently happens, because autism is a spectrum of things, right? I mean, there's people that are severely enough afflicted with it that they literally cannot.
There's people that can't talk; they're nonverbal.
Well, they can't remember. They don't remember to wipe their own butts, right? I mean, there's a huge, huge spectrum of altered mental position, if you will. People like you. I know a couple of people that are on the spectrum. There are places where they are unbelievable at what they can do because they can put their focus into singular things.
Well, you watch Rain Man when he's trying to play blackjack, right?
If you've ever actually dealt with people in that area personally or on a professional level, if you can find some way to silo someone that has that going on in a productive way for your enterprise, they're probably going to be the most productive person you've ever met.
They have a Walmart. Give me a second. The Walmart in Portage hires a lot of people. I don't know if there's a living facility there or something. They hire a lot of people kind of like that. And, they're not all the same, so I shouldn't say that, because everybody's different. But if you see, you go by, there'll be somebody who has an area. Everything in that area is absolutely perfect.
Right.
And absolutely, they are focused in on making sure whatever their spot is absolutely perfect. You don't want to go up and ask them, where's the auto department?
Right. There's a lot of there's a lot of divergence in terms of how it comes out. But one of the things that was said yesterday, and apparently the receipts are there on this, so we're going to see whether or not they're how real they are, because part of the problem with everything that's coming out of this administration is that, and this is why you're getting all the volatility, is nobody knows how serious any of this stuff really is, and we're going to find out. Okay, now as I've argued for a very long time, this whole tariff situation is something that the country needs to do, but we need to do it consistently, and the bigger problem, if we force, we use this as a means to force production back in the United States that never should have been left in those people who were acolytes of Friedman and turned out to be completely full of crap. Okay, they believed in something that was simply not true. And yet, rather than admit it was not true, they doubled down on more and more and more of it, and it's been going on for, you know, for three decades. Okay, so if we stop that, then that's good, except if you actually want things to change on a durable basis for the American population, and if you're a thinking person and you want to see the younger people in this country succeed and for this nation to be prosperous, then you want that to happen. If you want me to build a semiconductor fab in the United States, it's going to take me 5 years to build it, and it's going to take me 20 years to earn it out on an amortization basis. And I'm not doing it unless I have a reason to believe that 3 years into it, I'm not going to have the rug pulled out from under me and be flat on my back with, you know, $5 billion of my business's money turned into smoke. And if you can't provide an environment, and this is not just in this area, this is in all of the areas, and this is one of the problems with the way that we structure things and the way that we do things in the United States politically. You've got a real problem with getting people to make those investments if you don't solve that. And we need to solve it. I don't think simple legislation, certainly executive orders don't do it, because they can be reversed with the stroke of a pen by the next administration, or at least in theory. Now, the interesting thing, here's the interesting thing about this, Chief. Executive orders, by law, by the structure of them, and by their plain text, okay, remember all the Fannie and Freddie paper that the Fed bought that said on its face is not backed by or an obligation of the federal government? It was blatantly illegal for the Federal Reserve to take that stuff on their balance sheet during the crash. Okay, it was against the law. It was a felony, and nobody went to jail for doing it, and it was trillions of dollars of excess liquidity that was pumped into the system because Bernanke thought it was what he needed to do, and rather than go to Congress and get a law passed, he just did it. All right? Now, that
we have,
was...
Okay, quick question. Is government nothing more than a reflection of what we've become? Nobody pays any attention anymore.
Yes, I think it is. But part of the problem that we have here, okay, and a big part of where this schizophrenic, you know, up-down crap in the market is coming from, is exactly this, all right, is that happened then. Now we have, you know, and then you had Obama that comes in, and he does DACA by executive order, and he says at the signing he knows it's illegal. He doesn't care. He does it anyway. Now, is there a problem that we perhaps should have addressed through legislation? That's what legislative debates are about, right? Is figuring that stuff out. We didn't do it. Congress was unwilling to do it. Okay, so the president just turns around and says, F you, bang, with the stamp of his auto pen. There it is. And then we now have, you know, Trump comes in and says, okay, all these, you know, this group of people, these TDA people, whatever, out right now. And all of a sudden you have national injunctions issued by one judge, which are...
We got to get rid of him. We got to get rid of that judge.
Well, we got it. Here's the problem. It's on both sides, though, okay? And both sides forum shop to get in front of a judge that will do this, all right? And so if you want any kind of economic progress, you know, what made America into the industrial powerhouse it was? You had Henry Ford. You had the discovery of oil and petroleum as a... you know, as a transportation fuel and as an energy resource within the United States. And whether you were Democrat or Republican, nobody stood up and said, this guy's not building that factory here because I don't want all these blankety-blank, you know, insert your pejorative, right, in my neighborhood. No one did that. They said, nope, we want cars, we want... And then,
well, nobody had any idea what the after effects of this stuff was.
Well, okay, fine and well, all right. But there you are. And so now what we have is schizophrenia within the capital markets. But here's the thing. We had the same thing. You know, what was just reported last night? there's a individual within the Social Security system, all right? You know, Musk was ranting about these millions of people that are, you know, 120 years old, whatever have you.
So what? They don't get a check?
Hold on a minute. Yeah, last night. Now, again, I don't have a receipt on this yet because it hasn't been produced. But the claim was made that the Doge people have identified a person within the system who harvested off 400,000 of these supposedly erroneously dated inactive numbers and is selling them to illegal immigrants, and they've tracked it.
I don't believe... Why would you believe a word that guy says?
Okay, what happens when they actually indict
him? This is the part that I absolutely...
Chief, what if he's right and they indict him and throw him in jail?
Well, go ahead.
Okay, but wait a minute. Then your entire argument that this guy is just a LARPer and is screaming at the top of his lungs to
if you and I went in there and did this and had did it legitimately with a serious audit that they think they do anyway, he's not
which
the first.
They don't, by the way.
They have people that are supposed to.
But they don't.
All right, so you and I are going to walk in there, and we're going to pick out the most egregious part, whether it's a half of 1%, whether it's 1%, whatever it is in the system, and you're going to lob this out there on your ex, and all of a sudden the people who follow you are going to jump on it like a dog to bone. I mean, the thing that absolutely frosts me about this whole mess, being in the middle, which I really am, you know, Kevin accused me of not being, but he doesn't agree with people on the right, I guess, is not really, can't be in the middle. But this is all crap. This weekend I spent nothing but arguing, tried not to. Do you realize that my study of this tariffs and how complicated it is, on a very simple basis, let alone what these guys are trying to do on all these different levels, it would take 20 people way smarter than me when I was younger, and I'd have you on my team, to work it through and find out what exactly we're doing. Do you realize these guys are so smart, so much smarter than me, they've worked all this through because they're friggin' Republicans. And the Democrats are so stupid, they couldn't possibly work through. They don't have anybody they can add. What is wrong with these people, Carl? What is wrong with these? Do you think these morons that are on TV, all they're doing is back and forth, going to Greenland and do you think they're actually putting pen to paper and going through this and saying, what am I doing here? I don't think they have any idea, Carl.
No, Chief, but I don't think anybody has done any of that over the last 20 years, and that's why we're in this mess.
Well, it's exactly right. But everybody's okay, convinced that somehow if you put a big R on your head for Republican, all of a sudden you're this math genius, and your people have worked it all the way through to a gnat's ass. And I don't believe that for a second.
You want to know something? I'll take a broken process that winds up in autarky. That's where it ends, okay, if that's where it ends. I'll take that process over what we've been doing for the last 20 or 30 years.
I don't have any problem as a president, and I have a hunch if the two of us got launched, oh, God, into the Oval Office, one of the first things we would do is we would get the people or the management and budget in Congress. The first thing I would do is drag everybody's ass down to Camp David and say, this thing is a little bloated, guys. How are we going to do this? We're going to have these people go place by place. If they need some more people to do it, that's fine. And by the way, they're going to get their stuff together, and we're going to come back to Congress, and not only going to, you know, the 18 people that get, groups that get intelligence. You know what? I think off the top of my head, maybe we could use 15, really. I mean, maybe 16, maybe 14, but I don't know if we need 18. Why don't we have a study, take a look, put our people in there. If they need some help from, you know, from the accounting firms or somebody or other, we'll do that. Not going to pay them $600 an hour. You know, but, you know, by the way, we'll go do it, and we're going to take it to Congress, and we're going to go place by place. Sort of like Gore and Clinton did. And we're going to involve everybody. The unions, everybody's going to be involved because everybody knows we're a little bloated. That would be my style. This idea of some madman going in there and just coming up with some snake he pulled out from underneath the counter saying, look, everything I've done is legit because I found the snake. I don't buy that. That's not me.
Well, I don't either. But you know what I see here is a nation that has for decades, right? I mean, yeah, certainly was going on when I was a CEO, right? And was, you know, when I looked back from there, when I was way too busy worried about getting up in the morning and going and punching a clock so I got a check and didn't end up homeless out in the middle of the street. And this was before you could actually do that without getting arrested. Back to that point, the same crap was going on. Okay. Now, how much further? I don't know, because, you know, when I was a babbling little baby, I wasn't exactly, you know, compos mentis to figure it out. But it goes back, you know, throughout my entire adult life, right? The entire reason that I have this Excel spreadsheet and I do my own analysis on Jobs Friday for you, you know, with you on the show, and I'm going to do it this week because, you know, it's Jobs Friday.
Yep.
Is because in the
hey, short question. When these layoffs, some people are paying for 6 months, some people are not. Is any of that going to show up this week or no?
This report should actually have some fairly decent, you know, impact from these effects in there. Okay. We'll see what it actually ends up being. I mean, we'll get the ADP tomorrow, which is notoriously inaccurate, which in my opinion is stupid. It's been stupid for 30 years, because how is it that the company that does more paychecks than anybody else in the United States...
It can't be inaccurate. How could it possibly be?
Chief, yes, it can if it's a pure knob-twisting politics game. And, it, you know, and I know that, you know, it's hard to believe that would be the case.
Well, when they send that out, is there a page on there that a guy like Carl can go back and find the unadjusted number?
No, and this is part of the...
Well, that'd be the problem then, okay.
Well, so basically the issue is, you know, you would think that ADP would be essentially a definitive answer, because everybody from little guys to big guys uses them to issue checks.
So you can't trust them and just say, give me the number.
Look, I have never seen, all the way back to when I ran MCS, that report has come out every single Wednesday before Jobs Friday forever, and it has never tracked anything close to reality.
Well, I guess, here's Dr. Chain, how you started about this when we first started the show. Their job is not to track whatever the government comes out. Their job is to give you a number. The number should just be the number. If it matches, it matches. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
But Chief, you're assuming that there is the truth is the truth, and that's all people, you know, that's what people are vested in. It's not what people are vested in.
Well, I understand that, but what?
And I mean, you know, all I'm saying is that this is just not the way it is. And
well, John used to tell me, it doesn't track the federal number. I go, John, this is very simple. They do payrolls for 50% of the country.
Yeah.
Just tell people if they're up or down. That's all I'm asking. Whether they track somebody else or not. I mean, how difficult is this?
Chief, it is obviously not simply an SQL select statement, okay?
Yeah.
It should be, because it should take 30 seconds to produce, but it obviously isn't. And the evidence that it isn't is that for 30 years it never has been.
How many widgets did we produce last month? Well, what number do you want?
twist the knob, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Let me ask again. How many widgets did we produce last month? You got to understand. We had 3 days off. It was an 18-day. I just asked, how many did we make?
How many did you make? Yeah. Right. But this is the world we live in, okay? And where I think, I'll tell you what I'm coming to believe. All right, and I may end up being wrong on this, but I don't think I'm going to be. What I'm coming to believe is that Trump's first term was everything he tried to do. Somebody sued, somebody stopped it, and you know the entire thing. You know, impeach him on the first day, which, by the way, the predicate for it we now know was a lie. Okay. But, you know, this is politics. All right? Politics is a bare-knuckle sport.
But it's never... I don't think... Well, maybe I was just being naive when I was younger, but I've never heard anybody, when Obama came in, who was McConnell saying his job was to make his term miserable and get him out of there. No, that's not your job. You know, that's not your job.
Chief, politics is a bare-knuckle sport.
But this is... Somehow or another, Carl, we've got so much money involved at the federal level This is not about politics. This is about cash and the people behind these people. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's on both sides of the aisle.
Yes, without a doubt.
I mean, there's a report out this morning that says that every EV purchased over a 10-year period has over $100,000 worth of hidden subsidies that end up costing you and I. Okay.
Well, if you bought a regular car for the last 10 years, it certainly cost you.
Well, and guess what? Some of it came, you know, that's where some of it went, right? Is driving up the cost of your 1500 truck.
And it went to this guy who's running around. You know,
to this guy that's running around saying he's going to save $1 trillion.
Dash a little bit till Friday, but hey, it is so funny how people are locked in. We had I don't know, what do you call them now? I guess they're not tweets anymore, or whatever they are. They're X's or something from somebody who's a longtime listener, I guess, and something about you're totally wrong in mischaracterizing if they lay off 20,000 people in the Veterans Administration, it's not going to affect anybody's care whatsoever. These guys got it all figured out.
That's a total load of crap.
So we think 20,000 people go to work every day and do nothing?
Well, they go to work and they figure out ways to collect checks, which doesn't actually provide anybody any care. You know, what have I said about the medical system in general? You could take 80% of the spend on it and you actually would not screw a single person out of being able to get what they need.
Well, there's always going to be a little bit of bloat someplace, but some of the people who were laid off in Chicago that have been interviewed, who the hell knows how they found them, there's a group that in the mental health area, guys that have the PTSD, guys that have been in war have been.
Oh yeah, no, I know some of those people, and they've got issues. Yeah,
and
those issues are real.
And you know what's even kind of more bizarre is we've been in Chicago. There's, you know, Chicago's a mess, so we have food places that I think feed, God, Carl, 250,000 people a day that essentially are not governmental. And there's a couple of programs, one of which gives these areas, like the food depository and people, money to go out and buy local produce for...
Oh, don't get me started on food banks, because in Chicago, because I have... Boy, oh boy.
Well, what I'm saying...
The segment on that.
Okay, but the food depository puts out like 98% of the stuff they get in. They don't get paid much. They feed a full...
I get you, but they're...
Okay, but I'm saying... The people who are cheering this kind of stuff have no idea of the amount of people who donate time to these places.
Oh, no, and I was one of them, by the way.
Yeah.
This is why I know a lot about what's going on internally in it.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of people who donate time to the veterans' places.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, people are so quick to take one side or the other. I mean, am I to say that somewhere in the Veterans Administration with all these people working there aren't 50 people who don't do anything? Come on, I'm never going to say that. You know that. I've been around people too long. But the idea, if you're going to find those guys and get rid of the people you actually can get rid of, it's a big process. It's a lot of study. It's a lot of work. You don't just blow there on a weekend and say these are the guys that are doing no good. I don't think.
Yeah. This is going to be an interesting... This is going to be a very interesting thing. But I think... Where I was going with this, and I want to get this in because, you know, my time's up and Joel's about to pop up, is that my expectation is that this time around, when it comes to the tariffs and the other trade-related things, number one, Trump means it. Number two, he's got the people on his staff that have penciled it, okay, including Lutnick. And it's going to happen. And as a result, the repricing that's going to occur in the markets, from a standpoint of margin and operating income compression, it is going to be real. It will ultimately end up going to the people on the lower end of the economic strata, but not in a day. And in the process of this, what you're seeing now is the market coming to terms with the fact that this is really going to happen. And the reason you keep seeing these furious rallies is people bought it yesterday because it's the first of the month the 401k money's going in today, right?
All right. We got a dash here, but yeah. Ricky, do me a favor. Write this down. put Carl Milton Friedman, because I just listened to a Milton Friedman speech yesterday.
You said Milton Friedman?
Yep. What you just said, Carl. The problem is, I think so much stuff has changed since I used to have that guy for a professor, that a lot of it is total BS. I don't think.
Well, I think a lot of it's BS because we have so much corruption that's imbued itself into it.
You can't have a population that's beaten up as much as ours has in terms of costs right now. The reason why, I mean, I buy stuff at, say, Duluth Trading and L.L. Bean, right? And they used to always have a page where if you wanted to buy blue jeans or khakis made in the U.S., you could.
Right,
They're gone. You walk into an Old Navy, sorry, Old Navy, everybody knows the stuff's crap. But you see people in there with nine kids, they're buying stuff from Old Navy, they don't care if the T-shirt is only they need it to be $5 because it's going to be used three times and be wrecked by a three-year-old.
And it's going to be $5.
Yeah, they don't care if it's four times better and it's $15, they can't afford it. So there are an awful lot of stuff involved in this that gets in the way of the theory, both yours and Milty's. Just saying.
I understand. I'm just saying, but we'll have some time on this Friday.
Yes, SP Futures down 29, makes that 30. SP Futures down 1. What do we say? We go right to Joel.
Sounds good.
Joel, you with us?
I'm with you, Chief. Boy, you guys are smart, man. I don't know. I don't know if I might be a little in over my head with this company here, with you and Carl.
Well, I don't know about that so much. We're so smart. How come we're not Musk?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
Did you get along on the bottom yesterday?
I didn't get short.
Oh yeah. Boy, it looked like we were going to roll off a cliff yesterday, didn't we? And then, what was the news that came out? I saw Ford come flying back up. Was there a hint that there wasn't going to be any tariffs or something?
You know what? I mean, I think it was just a little front running of the window dressing. You know, just putting stuff in. I mean, we did. The Friday activity was vicious. There was a lot of undercut, even in the after hours on Friday. You got that strong follow through in the pre-market. So, if you look at it just from like an air standpoint, we dropped like 100 handles since quarter to four on Friday. And the algorithms, whatever, four or five standard deviations got kicked in and brought it back. So I was looking too. I mean, and now you're just so prone. Like when you see a move like, oh, was something said about tariffs and everyone's pretty much programmed into that. But all those people that bought on the close on yesterday are getting it stumped in their face. So tough market here. I labeled our broadcast putting lipstick on a pig. And maybe that was the rally from yesterday.
Well, you do have to. If you can still kind of buy the dip, but if you make some money on it, boy, you got to.
You gotta
say thank you very much. We actually had a real nice day. Well, as crazy as it may seem, because I can't pat myself on the back too much about this, Joel, because I've been people who didn't want to be involved in some of the higher flight price stocks in the last couple of years. We got a huge position in the gold miners and in the metals, because a lot of people thought, hey, with this inflation the way it is, those things are going to go up. Well, this year, they're all up. Okay, well, if I'd have bought everything on January 1st, I'd be saying, oh, man, I'm the best at this. Fact is, we're, a year early, maybe two. But this year has been spectacular for us. For those people who are not, everybody's in that, but some people that are. And, this trade in this market, our position, our protected program, because we have, now, when you design the program, you're supposed to buy protective puts. Okay, and the market's supposed to go up where you never need them, right? And you never, it's like your car insurance. You never want to cash it in, right? Right. The last thing you want to do is get a wreck. So, but now these things are flying back down, where you end up having to adjust the position instead of once every year, like once every week. And when you do that, you essentially are getting long when you're down and getting short when you're up. So it was never intended as a trading mechanism. But it sort of turned into one. On the bottom yesterday, we rolled our puts down. But at the end of the day, they were out of the money, for God's sake. I mean, that's not supposed to happen. But it turns out, but if somebody looks at it, they go, boy, these guys are geniuses. What a great trade. No, we're not geniuses. It's just managing what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do it once a year, not once a week. That's what.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's selling calls. Of course, you know, you miss up on some of the upside, right?
Yeah.
And you're not covered on the downside. You could do collars, or you know, you sell calls and turn around the money and buy puts. But if the stock goes nowhere, you know that, you know, you waste the call premium. You know, there's a lot of times, you know, timing the market now used to be, you know, something maybe you did, you know, monthly or quarterly or biannual or annual. But, you know, now with this kind of volatility and everything, you're right. I mean, you know, if you could take advantage of the options premium, it won't persist, but, you know, forever. But it's just like any other strategy in the market, Chief. You know, different market environments behoove different trading strategies. And even though something doesn't work for a long time, starts working, may start working all the time, work for a long time. So hats off to you. I mean, time in this market is a difficult thing, but if you're using the correct tools, you know, correct trade management, you could really take advantage of these fluctuations.
Well, yeah, but it's you know, you take with what gives you. But you know, you've been in the business long enough, and it's to trade. You can either trade one of two ways. One is protected, and one is not. I mean, when I used to trade in the OEX, and all of a sudden the market started to look like it was going down, huge. The first thing I'd do is I'd go to the book and buy a whole bunch of puts for a 16th that were so far out of the money nobody'd ever want them, right? Well, if you keep going down, all of a sudden people are going to pay up for other puts. Or they may pay an eighth for the ones you just bought because they need the numbers. They need the protection. Well, there's only two ways you can sell people puts. One is you already have some, and the other is you don't, right? And you really don't want to be... you wouldn't want to sell puts naked on the lows yesterday. How do you know what was happening? It could have been a war on, for God's sake, we were down that low. So you need to find yourself a way to protect yourself. But I think, Joel, and this is... I'm getting to the question here, sorry.
That's okay.
Most of the time, if you wanted to scalp the futures, all right, the S&P futures or the Q futures, whatever you want, I mean, the NASDAQ futures, you could protect yourself and you could go out and buy the straddle, say, next Friday, whatever it is. You know, you pay it enough to where you're covered on two futures. So all week long, whenever it's down, you buy two, and whenever it's way up, you sell four, and you do this all week, but you're protected, so you never have to worry about, you know, unlimited losses if it really goes against you. I'd say for 30 some years I've been in the business, you never would have made money on that trade.
Yeah.
Because your time decay was more than you could scalp, essentially. I'm going to say the last maybe couple of years, I think you almost could have made money on it. I didn't, you know, because I think it's a loser long run, but I think you could almost make money on that because the scalping opportunities are so incredible now.
Until these average ranges come down, Chief, you know, that strategy is going to work. And there's just, you know, the buzzword, uncertainty.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there you go. I mean, there couldn't be more uncertainty in the markets than we have right now. We'll see today, April Fool's Day. Everyone will be joking around tomorrow. Tariffs. You know, you never know. Q2 earnings season, or excuse me, Q1 earnings season is going to be rolling around. A lot of different types. The Fed, a lot of unknowns, Chief.
Serious question for you, because you're more of a technical dude than me. I don't really look at this stuff, but all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I did on Friday. The lows in the Qs, you know, last month, before we started the rally back a little bit, I think we're 468, right? I don't know if you noticed on Friday, but we must have hung it for 4 hours at 469. Uh-huh. And then ducked under it on the close. And now, yesterday, we were way below it, turned around and finished above it again. And now we're sitting below it at 4. Does that mean anything to you, that number? I mean, I have no idea.
Yeah, I would just, I would say for you NASDAQ people out there, the move was much more serious than that. I mean, the S&Ps did breach its low, and it closed quite above off it, but I'll just keep it, you know, just try and keep my technical analysis, you know, to the most simplistic terms, Chief, and, You know, you had multiple lows, you know. I'll call it, you know, where were these lows at? The prior lows. The prior lows were like about 468, right?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Right? Yeah, you breached that by a wide margin, right, yesterday, and you did come back. But until you could get back, for your NASDAQ investors, boom, right where you closed at 468.05, better regain control of that. That's a big level. That is, I know that you know, it closed at 68.92 yesterday, 68.94 on Friday. But man, you got to get back above those old lows and hold. And maybe if you even want to play it safer, say for 470 is a number. But you don't like the leadership that you had yesterday, Chief. You don't want to see. I mean, it. You know that. The thirst is not for these stocks. It's for value stocks. You look at like your Walmarts and your Procter & Gambles and your XLU. I mean, there's been a rotation going on out of these stocks. Who knows when it's going to, you know, when it's going to end and turn around on the dive. Also, people are pulling their money out of U.S. and they're buying everything else. So there's a massive rotation going on, and you just have to respect what the market's giving you. And right now, the market's telling you to play the safety trade.
The stuff that went on in Japan yesterday, those guys have been up all year, and yesterday they were down like 4%. I haven't checked this morning, but do you watch that stuff at all, or it's hard for me to...
Nah, it's so much, man. I got so much with the U.S.
market. Yeah, me too. I can't figure out what they're...
Okay, right, bud. Chief. I got to hop.
All right, take care, bud.
Go Blue. We'll talk to you next week.
Do we have Kenny?
I don't see Kenny just yet, but we still have Carl, though.
Well, let's bring Carl in until we get Kenny.
Absolutely.
Carl, are you any kind of a technical dude?
One second. I think he might have to plug in the mic again.
I hate it when he mutes himself.
Yeah, I'm getting his attention right now.
What good is Carl without a mic?
There we go. I think we're good. Carl, you're on the air.
Don't hear him.
Oh, well,
there he is.
Yeah.
There he
How
is.
How about that? Okay, yeah, it takes a second for my computer to decide that it likes that I plug the mic back in.
I just said, what good is Carl without a mic?
Well, you know, I can listen. You know, even when I'm not actually on the show, I can listen. I just mute the microphone so it doesn't, like, pick up me, you know, banging around.
Ambiance, the dog barking and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, that stuff. But it's like I was, you know, like I was saying, I think right now what you have, the schizophrenia, is that there's a rebalance. Chief, there's a rebalancing that has to happen in the economy because you cannot squeeze the people on the lower end of the K any further. And you also can't continue to just emit more credit and make people feel like it's all right, because all it does is drive up cost. It may not do it instantly, but it always does. I mean, that's, you know, inflation is always a monetary phenomenon, right?
So, since one of them's in the grave, and we're talking bad about him, there's two people left that believe that, you and me.
Well, you know what? There you go. But here's the thing: is that whether you believe it or not, whether you think it's crap or it's not crap, the reality of it is that we are stuck in the world that we live in today, and that's not going anywhere, right? So here we are. Fine, I'm good with this. But I think there are people within, you know, and it's not Trump. It's, you know, Trump's got his way and Musk has his way. You know, Musk has been ranting about you know, there's a population collapse going on in the United States. If we don't, you know, if we don't start getting busy with, you know, between boys and girls, there ain't going to be anybody left.
Well, he's leading the pack on that.
Well, he's doing Genghis Khan, but consensually, okay? Genghis Khan,
if you got that much money, a lot of things are consensual.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, bribery counts, right? But it's still consensual. You offered somebody something, they said yes. Khan didn't bother with that. The thing that I find fascinating about that, though, is that is a self-correcting phenomenon, because if in fact this goes on for another, you know, a generation or two, and it's because we have built an environment where women, who obviously are the only ones who can make this decision ultimately, the genie is out of the bottle in terms of being able to control whether or not you have children. It's never going back in. So that is the way it is. And if they have come to the conclusion that it's not worth it, that's what they're, that's the decision they'll make. But guess what? When that population change happens, labor becomes worth more because there's less of it, right? And asset demand becomes less because there are a few people demanding it. The basic laws of supply and demand are not going to change. They never have throughout history, and they never will. So,
well, the government's involved in all of them, all of it now, so it changed a little bit. Well, I understand
that, but Chief, this is a this. I mean, now are you going to like the way this self-corrects? Probably not very much. But will it? Yes. And the idea that humans will go extinct because of this is just a load of crap, and it's Musk running his mouth, and he's wrong. Okay, and I mean, I'll be eaten by worms before I know if I'm right about this, but I'm absolutely certain that I am. So, this to some extent, you know, this is one of those "this too shall pass" kinds of things. But because I have a daughter who is a young adult, I want to see this correction take place in a way that benefits her from a standpoint of, you know, that goes on beyond the point that I'm gone. I do not want the continuation of the kind of BS that my father ran to my face when my daughter was an infant, well, a toddler at that point, crawling around on his carpet. We literally packed up and left in the middle of a holiday dinner. I'm like, I'm done. I'm having nothing to do with somebody that believes this with their own, you know, their own extended offspring. I'm sorry.
Believes what?
The man was a CPA, so he was extremely intelligent, okay, when it came to finance. And his perspective was, I'm going to get mine, screw you, and if your daughter ends up getting effed as a result of it, that's just too damn bad. I don't care.
Well.
And you know what? And at that point,
there's people who believe the Lord helps those who help themselves. I mean,
well, you know what? And you could make an argument that the correct way to help yourself in that situation is you immediately shoot the people that intend to screw your kid. So, I was like, no, we're done. And, you know, she doesn't remember it. She was too young. But we packed up our stuff. I threw her in the car seat, and we drove back to Chicago.
Well, people have different motivations. I mean,
I understand that, but if you tell me that you're going to F my kid,
yeah, that's okay, a problem. That's a problem.
We're not going to have a conversation about
especially
that.
Especially if you don't have a heart toward your granddaughter, you don't have much of a heart.
Well, I'm saying, that was my father.
Yeah, I'm saying
yeah. So, I mean, you know, this was not some, well, this was not abstract. I'm going to hose your kid.
Well, you know, right? It's my nephew. Right. I was never around my brother. You know, we have a great relationship, but he's only 4 years younger than me. I was never really around kids, right?
Right.
Well, my nephew has two little daughters. God bless. There's nothing you wouldn't do for them. You know, they absolutely they take your soul over, for God's sake.
Oh yeah.
So do puppies, for God's sake. But still, anybody who's fragile, if you're any kind of person, I mean, how do you not worry about them? I mean.
Chief, I was blown away. Okay,
it's pretty scary
by what had happened, and I was just like, I'm done. You know, we're through having a conversation.
Well, but the world is, you know, in my industry, I look at what's happened by some people, and they don't care about the people they leave, you know, in the wake. I mean,
I understand, yeah. and I totally understand this. Okay, I really do. I totally understand this, and But what I have pointed out to people all the way through this, you know, this process, if you will, is that the expansion of multiples that has come as a result of policy is not an accident.
It was the same stuff that happened during the 2000s.
But it is a result of deliberate policy, both by people in industry and by people within the government. And at some point, the screwing that imposes, I mean, and it's a soft screwing. People don't see it
and half the people don't even recognize it's happening. They don't even recognize the party that's doing to them, or both parties, or whatever. They don't even realize how it's getting there.
You're absolutely right. And the thing is that but when you get down to it, and you look at all this and how this all happens. My perspective on this is that There is a point at which it has to stop, because at some point you're going to get riots because people can't afford to do things like buy basic.
I think you ratchet people's expectations down enough to where they think it's almost normal.
Right.
Remember? I want to actually a little bit more about portfolios and people and what I'm running into, because you know we're not actively looking for many more clients. There's people that, you know, if it's a situation that only maybe we can help, if it's concentration issues and stuff, we're pretty good at and other people aren't. Or if it's somebody really has a portfolio and wants to talk to us, you know, I or my brother or a couple of our guys, would we talk to you and work with you about it? Sure, we'd always take a few more people, but I'm not into this me trying to talk you into doing something you don't want to do. I mean, I'm kind of over that. But the thing that I'm missing now, I've never seen people's portfolios as unmatched for what, if you started all over and said, what would you do? I mean, I talked to a guy last week, St. Patrick's Day night. He was running over. He says to me, Chief, and this guy talked to me about opening an account, I'm going to say, 8 years ago.
Right.
And it just wasn't a match. And he didn't want to open one. I was so happy when he said that, you know. And so now we have this conversation. Can't wait to talk to me about the market.
Right.
And I go, okay. And I says, does your portfolio pretty much look the same? Because I have a pretty good memory about this stuff.
Right.
I haven't really changed anything.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And he said, well, this one, you know, is down some and this one's down some. But they're really good stocks and I've made money on them. And the guy who gave them to me really knew his stocks.
Right.
And I said, his name is Jeff. I go, Jeff, is the guy even still alive? Well, no. Yeah. I said, well, okay. I said, and he looks at me and he goes, you don't like my portfolio. I said, Jeff, it has nothing to do with your portfolio. 10 years ago, 8 years ago, you were working and doing pretty
now
well.
Now you're not.
Now all these stocks are, you know, 100% higher than they were. You did great on them. Now, if you were to design, if I were to give you cash today, there's no way you would use the cash to have.
You wouldn't do this, right?
You wouldn't do this. Yeah, but look how well I've done on them. Jeff, this is why we didn't do business the first time. what do you want me to say? I mean, I asked you, if I gave you cash, would you put the thing together like it is? You tell me no, and I say, okay, let's fix it. I don't want to fix it. What are we doing here? Let's talk about the bears.
Right.
I mean, some of these questions, they suck. They have to ask people. I remember a guy coming in one time years ago, and he goes, I got 10,000, the stock was a lot cheaper. I got 10,000 shares of Exxon. God, that's great. Where'd you get that? Well, my dad died, left it to me.
Right.
Okay. I said, well, if I gave you $2 million, would you say, hurry up and go buy me $2 million worth of Exxon? Well, hell no. I said, would your dad? Well, no. I said, well, what are we doing with this?
Why are you doing that? Right.
Are we going to protect it? You already got the piggy move up on the tax thing. I said, what are we doing this? Do you want me to protect it? You want to get rid of some of it? You want me to start selling some calls aggressively? And if we get called away, so what? What do you want to do? Well, just leave it the way it is. I'm okay then. What do you need me for? You don't. You wonder. I always do the best I can, Carl, and it's never my decision. It's not my portfolio. It's yours. But if I say, by the way, if I gave you the dough, would your portfolio tomorrow look like this? And you tell me no, and I say, okay, let's fix it. You look at me like I got three heads. I don't know where else I can go in the conversation, to be honest with you.
You know what? I'm 100% with you on that. And I, you know, believe it or not, we actually agree.
well, you know, we always agree on where we're going. We just don't know. And I have the same discussion kind of virtually with Hal, who's going to be on in a bit, and you, and to a certain extent, Kevin, because I think that I, except for maybe Hal, I probably know more about the economic theory of this than most, yet I have seemingly a much different feel for how much messing around with the free market system we've done to where stuff isn't even going to work like you think it's going to work.
Right, right.
I mean, maybe...
I get that. I'm just, you know, I just look at all this stuff and I say, what in the F are these people doing? All right? And, you know, this is, from my perspective, this is a serious issue. This is really serious stuff.
What I don't equate. Let me ask a simple question. I don't equate cars being made, say Chevy pickups being made in Canada, the same as I would being made in Mexico. Because in Canada, people are paid as much. The Milton Friedman theory,
well, this
seems
theory
to have worked there. I mean, they sell a lot of Chevys in Canada.
Right.
We don't really want Canada, or I don't think we do. We don't want Canada to go out and make BMW their national car name. We'd rather have it be Chevy or Ford. I don't think they're anywhere near the same problem, Canada or Mexico. Do you?
Well, so how about yes and no? How's that for an answer?
Well, I mean, I think that probably is the answer, actually.
But I think that the. So one of the, you know, as I've pointed out a few times, I have all sorts of issues with what I'm seeing in the, you know, when I start digging into some of this, some of the situation with the cross-border stuff and, you know, how it is being done today. It's there. People do not build billion-dollar businesses. That, you know, in General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, you know, Stellantis now. I mean, they are, okay? People do not build billion-dollar businesses without some kind of concept of how they put their supply chain together in a way that is from their perspective, the most efficient and, you know, is going to be of the most benefit to their stuff, right? I mean, they just don't. That's just the way it is. So this is the reality that we live in today, is that there is a reason for this, and the reason is some form of arbitrage. Now, that I cannot pinpoint where it's coming from doesn't mean it isn't happening.
But you might not know. I mean, Detroit is pretty freaking close to Toronto.
Well, I get that. But, you know, but there still is a border. There still is a toll being paid. There still is shipment across, you know, that border twice. These things are happening. They are costs.
You know why? Let's tell you something. Really, you're going to think I'm really nuts here, which you probably do already. You know why? I'm going to say 80% of the reason why there was a big Oldsmobile assembly plant in Kansas City.
No.
Because the Monon Line railroad virtually.
Okay, so it's a railroad transport.
No, but the railroad, virtually every east to west railroad, especially in the north.
Yeah, it goes through there.
Came through Chicago.
Right.
The Monon Line did not. They had a direct line from Detroit to Kansas City. So you didn't have to mess with the Chicago switching around. If you wanted to send the parts and send the Oldsmobiles back.
So it was faster.
It was absolutely faster. So that's why that went to Kansas City. Now, what if Kansas City happened to be Toronto? And by the way, there's terrific rail lines from Detroit to Toronto.
Oh, actually, I've ridden that train.
It used to be the Grand Trunk.
I've ridden that line. I've actually taken a train on that line.
So I'm saying, I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that now in Mexico, I'm with you. Okay, why exactly haven't these wages gone up? And oh, by the way, are they polluting in Mexico and they can't pollute here? I mean, what's Ford and Chevy doing down there? What's their edge? And by the way, I'm right with you on this. I'm not supposed to disagree with you, but I'm right with you on this. I can't spot the edge in Toronto, to be honest with you.
No, and the thing is that but there is. I mean, you know, any time that you see something like this going on, there is an answer. Okay, it's not rocket science. It's not magic. There's an answer. You just don't know what the answer is.
Well, maybe the people up there working the factory are all buying Chevys.
Well, perhaps. All right. I mean, you know, but like I said, there's an answer to the question. Okay. Now, we at some point in the United States, we have to rebalance this system. It has to happen. And we do not want to do it because it will be extremely disruptive, particularly to people who are higher up in the capital stack. And I understand this, but that doesn't matter because if we don't, you know, look, we have very real geopolitical risks that come into this too. The idea of having all of our pharmaceutical precursors and assembly happening in China is nuts. Okay, it's flat out nuts. The idea of having every fab in the world being there or in Taiwan is nuts.
Well, it's not nuts if you're trying to put together a car and you need 50 small parts, and since Radio Shack's not around, The guys in China said, we'll give them to you for 50 cents a piece. And here, there's nobody even give them to you, let alone the $2.
But the reason that they're 50 cents a piece is that the Uyghurs are being forced to produce
them. I'm with you on that. Okay, that's what I'm saying. But they're not all the same. I wouldn't accuse Canada of that.
No, but what I'm saying is that this imbalance has screwed Americans for
absolutely
decades.
Hey, before we bring Helen, one more question. Why do you think, is it just supply and demand? Why do you think the wage growth in Canada has not? You know, by the way, son of Milty, somebody actually asked him in class one day when he was talking about, you know, factories in Mexico and something, and somebody said something to the effect, well, we have pollution laws here, and there's only the Rio Grande. Just because we aren't going to be able to pour garbage in the water on our side,
they'll do it
on the other side, and it's cheaper. And he goes, well, that'll only last a little while because they'll be like us and want a clean environment.
Except it didn't happen.
My question to you, and this is more of a Friday's discussion, why? Is it in China? We know why. It's because of the government. Now in Mexico, is it because of, you know, chaos? Is it because of the gangs? I mean, is it just
no,
they have
because,
too many?
It's because people are used to a crap lifestyle, and they put up with it, and then you have the repressive part of it, which is the drug gangs, okay, which have imbued themselves so far into the government that trying to stop it gets you hung from a freeway overpass.
Oh yeah,
and that's for real. I mean, that's not rhetorical. You really do have bodies decorating freeway overpasses.
Oh yeah, I mean it's what. One of my buddies said some people left their town in a van and were never seen or heard from again, you know, that type
it
of thing.
It happens all the time there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and by the way, that fear. And you know what? Fear from the public themselves within the government that might happen to the people in the government is what, you know, Paine and others in our founding fathers said is good. However, when it's the government doing it, whether it's a quasi-government like a bunch of drug runners or the real government doing it, it's bad.
Yeah, right? Well. So all right, do we have Ricky, do we have Hal?
You do.
Yes,
right,
we do.
All right, why don't we'll continue this on Friday. Some good stuff. I just, I guess my bottom line is I don't want to lump Canada and Mexico together in this argument. I think they're two different. I think all these places are different. I don't want to lump, you know, put China together with Japan, really, either.
Well, they're all different, but yeah. I don't think that, you know, I think there is an attempt to say, look, the you know, we can identify the trade balance on a nation-by-nation basis, okay? That is a number that we can identify without too much trouble. That's pretty easy to do.
You think these people even know what the current account balance is?
Well, I think Lutnick does. Do I think Trump understands it? No, but I'm pretty sure Lutnick does.
Okay, well, I'm sure. Yeah, I would hope so. Working for Cantor Fitzgerald.
Well,
for
given who he is, yeah, I'm pretty sure he does.
I tell you what, if he doesn't, they got a problem at Cantor Fitzgerald.
We got big problems. That's right.
Oh, God. Anyway, take care of yourself, bud. Hal, how are you?
Doing well.
So you've been critiquing us, been grading us. What are you thinking?
Well, all I know is M2 is on the rise again. It's rising parabolically, and yields are, they kind of collapsed on Friday, the longer-term yields.
Yeah.
And the intermediate yields, they kind of collapsed on Friday, so.
Can you make a song instead of On the Road Again, We'll Be on the Rise Again?
Well, you know, the Fed doesn't sound like it's inflating, but M2 is growing. If it continues on this current pace, M2 will be up 8%
well, they had
by next year.
They had
year.
A pause last month. I didn't check this month. I'm going to check right now.
Well, the M2 data is a month old, right? So I'm just.
But I'm saying the yeah, last month, old. Which was a month, the one that came out at the end of February showed a drop in the rate of going up. Now you're saying it's back again the other way?
Yeah, it's back up. Yeah, I just did a estimation. I projected out the current trend into the year. Into the coming year, and if we continue on this trend, it'll be up 8%, which means inflation is not.
Wow, I had it like 6.
Yeah.
All right. So December.
My current calculation has M2 growth projected if it continues on this trend. If it continues on trend, growing at 8% a year.
Well, we're doing $100 billion a month.
Yeah.
What was the month? Okay, this is one we were going up on this pace that you're talking about.
Yeah,
and then in November we had
I tweeted the trend on my Twitter account. Well, on my ex account.
You're one of these modern guys. I do something stupid and go like to the Fred and look at the gram.
Well, I downloaded the data and then I put a quadratic trend to it because the R square is 91%.
All right, so you see now. If you're a guy like me, all you do is you look at the number at the end of February, which is the last one we have, by the way, that just came out, and I go back like 6 months, you know, to find out what the percentage is and multiply it by two, and I get the yearly. I'm one of these old school dudes, you know. But I added it like I added 5.5-6%, which is pretty darn high.
The correlation on this trend is 95%. So,
well, I mean, yeah. It should be. We're looking right at him. It ought to be. Leave it to a mathematician to make a calculus problem out of this graph.
God. Yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, I you know, the interest rates are still elevated historically, you know, for the last 20 years. So the federal funds rate is
high. But the 10-year is not elevated.
Yeah, but all the other yields are right at the federal funds rate or below it. The one yield that is way above the federal funds rate, it's at 4.65. It is the 20-year. But I think the 10-year right now, the 10-year, as of last Friday, the only thing that's above the federal funds rate target is like the 1 year and the 20-year. Everything else is below the federal funds rate target.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted the chart. I have this chart that basically does the yield curve anytime the Federal Reserve releases the yield data on, like, I don't know, how many of these yields are there? Like 10 yields?
Oh, yeah, at least 10.
10 different yields. So I have it day by day, so you can look at it and see the yield curve, whether it's sloping up or sloping down. And, you know, back in, back in February, on February 12th, the yield curve was pretty steep. Now, as of last Friday, the yield curve is looking pretty inverted, with the exception of the 20-year yield. So, I think it's signaling recession. But we're having this recession at the same time. M2 appears to be growing at 8% a year.
Well, you listened to your main man Powell last week or 2 weeks ago. And
well, he's not my main man. He's not my main man at all. Nobody.
Your buddy Paul. he's not your buddy either.
A guy that talks about money supply. Let's call him that.
A guy called Paul. You know, it depends on what you listen to. Because afterward, I love to critique everything and everybody, this question, that question. I guess I'm never going to change. I'm rocketed into this monetarist theory thing, which is how I was trained. And that's all I listen for.
Yeah.
And I hear a guy saying, Our goal is 2%. We're basically willing to let it go, you know, for, you know, higher than that for, like, you know, for a while. But our goal is 2%. And it's like me saying, my goal is to be a jockey. But boy, that pie looks good. I mean,
I saw you on the Florida team this weekend.
Yeah,
Tom Ho. Yeah, he's good. He's a good ball player, man.
I didn't realize that. In my younger days, I left one I forgot about.
Is that what you look like in your 20s?
I didn't have red hair. But actually, I did. In terms
that
of...
That kid can play some ball, man.
Oh, I know. He can jump. I can never jump. But he's also, what, he's about 6'7", 6'8"?
Yeah, yeah.
I was 6'4", and I could jump maybe 2 inches.
Well, you know, I like... My wife finds it funny because I brag about two things about my youth. I had really nice calves.
God.
And I could jump, you know, 30 plus inches in the air. My brother Rob.
I had terminal white man's disease.
You know, I saw a picture of Larry Bird trying to block Dr. J's, I think, layup or finger roll or dunk. And both Dr. J and Larry Bird are pretty far above the ground.
Larry Bird could jump.
He could jump. I mean, he was probably 3 inches. Lower in his vertical leap than Dr. J in that photo, and he was above the court.
Yeah. I would my friend and our contributor to the show now, Mr. Bill Moriarty. Who, by the way, hope he's not listening because I'm going to say this. The response to him on the show has been terrific. People love him. because he's, you know, he's talking about the waterworks and in a way that people can understand, and yet it's still pretty complicated.
Yeah,
I don't know if you listen to him at all, but he, Bill's also was a really
hour is he usually on?
Well, he's kind of been subbing for people, but he's been in on Monday because he also Bill also is his hobby, because we used to play three nights a week together. Bill's really a basketball player, but he was the one guy when we were in, I think we were in, we might have been in college. Because we're a little older, Larry Bird. He said, I got to go see this guy play. We might have been out of college. No, we were out of college. And he goes, and he went down to an Indiana State game because he was getting so much hype. And he basically said, I got to go see this white guy, Hick French Lick, go see if he's any good, right? Because back as Bill, how is he? And he goes, everything you need in basketball, he's got. Amazing court vision, amazing hands, quick release, knows right where everybody is. He's spectacular.
Yeah.
And boy, he was, and it was in college. He goes, and he was right. He goes, he's.
You know, Danny Ainge was a good ball player, too.
Oh, yeah. Don't bring up that word.
He upset everybody in Oregon. He was, I think he grew up in Eugene, Oregon, he played football.
Irish, he beat the Irish in the NCAA, so don't bring him up.
Yeah. He played quarterback, he plays golf, he played baseball, and he played football.
Well, you know.
And he's good at all four.
All those guys are.
I mean, Adrian, Danny, if you remember, Danny didn't want to play for a bad NBA team, and he started at third base for Toronto as a rookie. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
you could play. Bird actually called him the best athlete he ever saw because he was so good at all four of those sports.
There's a couple of guys, get a load of this, a couple of brothers. I haven't seen them in a while because I haven't been there, but they come out to our Sunday morning softball early in the season. They just won a game or two. When they were 25, I think they're twins or something. They'd already been on two or three national championships, 16-inch teams.
Hmm.
And they both got offered rides to baseball to, like, Florida State or someplace. They said, nah, we don't want to go down there. But they walk out, and you just look at them and you go, wait a minute. They're the fastest guy in the field. They got the best arm. They hit the ball the furthest. Whatever position you want, you put them there. I wouldn't want to come near that guy in a basketball court. How could he not be good?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Or in a football field. How could he not be good?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember some guy asking the Cubs when Ernie Banks.
I always thought Charles Barkley would make a great, like, linebacker, but Charles didn't like. The funny thing Charles says, he doesn't like the contact.
Oh, yeah.
And yet he was one of the most physical ball players. I mean, now that guy was freaking good.
Oh, yeah.
And how he gets cut from the 84 Olympic team.
Well,
he was
Adrian Dantley he was highly recruited as a tight end and as a basketball player.
Yeah.
Look at the size of
Adrian
the guy's
Dantley, game. You watch, if you want to get good at the low post game, you study his low post moves. He was incredible. His footwork is just impeccable. Any kid out there that wants to be good in the low post, go watch some Adrian Dantley, Olajuwon, and even Michael Jordan video. I mean, their footwork is just unbelievable. And then Kevin McHale as well.
You needed, for a guy, when I talk about basketball, for a guy who couldn't jump, you got to get good at other stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Barkley was not anywhere as tall as the guy he played against. But he had a big butt, very strong. And you know what I found when I couldn't jump? If the guy is leaning on you, or you're leaning into him, and you go up, he can't jump.
Yeah.
How can he jump if you're leaning on him?
Yeah. Well, the best way to do the low post move, that drop step move, is not with your elbow, not with the chicken wing. You do it with your butt.
Yeah.
Because officials aren't looking at your butt. They're looking at that elbow.
But whatever it is, any kind of contact, and the person can't jump.
Yeah.
And if you have a quick release, they look at it like, I should have been able to block that. No, you couldn't.
Yeah.
We look at guys like, you see the size of these people afterward?
Yeah.
Adrian Dantley now probably has a size 60 coat. Austin Carr was best basketball player I ever saw in college. I never saw like a Blue or a Wilt or anybody, but he still owns two or three of the most points scored in the NCAA back from 1970, and the dude, there was no three-point line.
Wow.
But he was just so much stronger than everybody. Somebody kind of make some contact, lean in, and he had a fadeaway jump shot. I don't care who you were, you couldn't block it because he leaned into you. He kind of pinned you to the ground, and then jumped back and shot it. Okay, I got a question. Stump the hell.
Yeah.
Highest prime rate on history. What was it? And what was the date?
Highest prime rate in history probably was late 70s, early 80s.
Ding, ding, ding.
And I'm thinking, man, because the federal funds rate got up to as much as 20.
Yep.
So, I mean, I can't imagine a prime rate of 23%.
No.
But I would say maybe 14, 15%.
You're doing good. December 19th, 1980, 2150. U.S. prime rate record high. Where's Sheen Easton? We're an all-time high.
I can't imagine it being that high. I mean, that's unreal that it's that high back then.
There I was on the
trading floor. My buddy Steve, we'd go to the car lots every weekend, and he would price out the Trans Ams, right? Because, you know, kit was big back then.
Yeah.
And I would look at the sticker going, 14%. I didn't know what it meant. 14% was the interest rate on those cars back then.
Of course, the car was cheaper, but still.
Yeah, 14%. But 21% prime rate, that is just nuts.
And they rusted out 20% a year.
Yeah. Well, if you're in Michigan, they do. I always tell people, don't buy a car that was ever registered in Michigan because they assault the crap out of the roads.
Oh, it can't be worse than Chicago.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's probably true. But when I lived in Michigan, man, it seemed like all the wheel wells were rusted out on a car that was 5 years old. Yeah.
Well, plus, after, like, at 1989, all of a sudden everybody changed their metallurgy to where they were much more rust-resistant.
Yeah. Well, you know, even the condo that we lived in, our first condo in Salt Lake when we moved there in 2013, they were using that salt that just rusted the crap out of the rails. And those rails were actually, they looked pretty dangerously rusted through. So, but I think they had, after they fixed it, they went to a different salt that doesn't corrode the iron.
That's not as much, but...
Yeah.
Well, Dr. J had this... Trans Am, and with the T-tops. So one night,
like the one in Smoking the Bandit?
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
Just like it. But, of course, one night somebody tried to steal the T-tops.
Dude, my favorite car of all time is a 73 Camaro with the chrome bumpers. That is my all-time favorite car. I love that car.
I used to drive the thing, right? And I had a... we also had a GTO in the driveway.
Nice.
The difference in the GTO shift... The 5-speed, and it was allegedly a Hurst shift in the Firebird. That thing was terrible. All I did was hunt around for gears. The GTO, you just slammed one into the other. But the GTO I had, no power steering, no power brakes. And I don't know, it had, if you're going 70, you let the foot off the gas, the thing would like suck down like if you're in second gear and need another gear bad.
Yeah.
Plus it had white vinyl seats, convertible. So my first day I get the thing and I go, this is cool. I go out and it's nice and hot, no big deal. Almost like it's stuck by a train. Sun beating down on me, up came the top, and that was it. In a daytime convertible ride. At night it was okay, but
when I was in high school, right before I joined the Navy, I bought a Spider, like a 1980 Spider with a convertible top. It was black with a red pinstripe. And Rob and I are driving around Lewiston.
Is this a Fiat Spider?
Huh?
A Fiat Spider?
Or yeah, no? I think it was a Fiat Spider. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
All I remember is the name Spider, and I wanted it because it was a convertible. And we're so amped to drive it that in February in Lewiston, Idaho, it's down there by, you know, 700 feet above sea level, so it's really warm. It's the lowest elevation in Idaho. And we're driving out the top down, and it's like 60 degrees out and feels good. We decided to cruise up to Pullman, Washington to go visit some high school friends at Washington State University, and we had the top down. You get up on top that the Palouse, you know, you got to climb... 2,300 feet, I think it is. I think it's about 3,000 or around there. You have to climb about 2,000 feet in 8-9 miles, and we got on top of the Palouse, and we were freezing to death. And we're driving. We didn't put the top on until we got to the McDonald's in Poland.
Oh, this was you had to put the top
on.
On
the ground. They're still on the ground.
Oh God. So okay, we've been obviously talking all morning about the tariff stuff, and your name was coming up.
Yeah.
The question is. This is such a broad-based policy, at least it seems like it.
Yeah.
And yet it's, every place you're doing it, I think is going to have different results. I think it's so complicated, and you and I joust all the time about the theories don't work now if the theory's being interrupted. I was just talking to Carl. There's a massive difference between auto construction in Canada and auto construction in Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you? I think there's a lot of difference between the stuff in Japan and the stuff in China. I mean, isn't Japan supposed to be a? You know, we pretty much asked those guys to put some plants here, and they did. I don't know that they're. You know, I guess I'm not. I can't figure out what the various countries and the various products, what exactly the goals are, because it seems to me the outcomes are going to be so much different.
Yeah, you know, I think if you take a macro approach to it, it's probably...
You mean an overriding horizon idiot approach to it?
Yeah, just a country-level approach to it, right? Where you kind of aggregate, like, everything together. Like, there's one good, the import good, right? There's one export good. There's one consumer, there's one firm, and there's one government. That's the macroeconomic level, right? Everything's aggregated. In macroeconomics, there's the foreigner, there's the foreign consumer, the domestic consumer, the government, and the firm, right? That's macroeconomics. If you take a macroeconomic view of it, you're probably thinking doom and gloom. At a microeconomic level, at the individual person level, the effect of the tariff is going to depend on who is buying the product. If it's Mercedes-Benz or a Rolls-Royce that's being imported from Europe, the rich person's probably going to just, you know, pay it, right? They're going to pay it. And so maybe the tariff raises the price of those kind of goods about the amount of the tariff. So if the tariff is 25%, maybe those go up 25%. But for goods that... For goods that poor people purchase, you know, like bananas or something like that, if there's multiple places where these bananas come from, and a tariff is only on one nation, what will probably happen is we'll just change the supply chain to a nation that has a lower tariff rate. So on a microeconomic level, I don't think it is painful as it would be at the macroeconomic level.
But you know,
It's a consumption tax essentially, on goods that are made overseas.
But the thing I'm more than concerned about.
And it's what really matters is what's the elasticity of demand.
Is
elasticity of demand elastic or is it inelastic?
Well, it also depends on who's going to eat the cost or who's going to raise theirs. And if the people here see it as an opportunity to raise the prices here, everybody loses.
Yeah. Well, but you know, it is kind of remarkable that there are trillions of dollars being announced of coming investment in the United States. I mean,
announced by people you can't believe.
Yeah, I know. I mean, these are promised investments, and they haven't happened yet. And you know, they can you know build a factory, and that's all demand stimulus at the macroeconomic level.
But
the factory's operational. Once it's operational, then you have a supply effect.
But yeah, we can't on this show, because collectively we're smart enough to ride herd on the other person enough to where we try not to. I'm going to say stupid stuff. Not that any of us really do say stupid stuff, but we all say stuff that, you know, after a while we go, wait a minute, that's not all that right. The message that's being delivered. It's just like when Powell talks. And you ask a question regarding the price level, and he immediately does the two-step, says, "Okay, well, here's what the rate is going forward." That's not what you're asking.
Yeah.
You're saying, "My people in my district or whatever the hell they are gagging over what happened to them over the last 5 years. Are you going to address that at all?" Yeah. The answer really is no. Correct. The answer is like going forward. We're going to
if there was nothing else going on and the tariff get implemented, and you know, maybe these imported goods go up by the amount of the tariff, the percentage increase in the price that we pay domestically equals the percent increase in the tariff.
Well,
I think it's going to do a lot of damage, but ceteris is not always paribus. If RFK Jr. dents can create a huge dent in the oligopoly, in the cartel, not the oligopoly, the cartel that is big food, big pharma, if he can put a dent in that whole
He's not structure. Going anywhere there because they're too
I know,
powerful.
But if he can, then that would counteract the effect of the tariffs.
But here, my question was one of timing. If Trump would have, if this has been his modus operandi.
Well, it's been this, I mean, if you really
okay, what I'm saying is, here's where I'm going with this, Al. Just like you and I have discussions where we agree on the theory, and I go, wait a minute, but the timing isn't there. This is already... Yeah. If he did this in his first term, I think the world was a lot different.
Yeah.
If he would have dropped 25% tariff on cars in 2017 and it worked its way through the system and maybe the company took a hit or something, and the actual price was 10% higher and it drove some stuff back here, I might say, gee, you know, the end might justify the means. I might. But now he seems to have totally forgotten what he did, at him personally, with the COVID and everything. The price of the cars is already up 25-30% from 2017, maybe more. Well, maybe so now to say another 25 isn't going to make any difference, that's ignorant. I mean,
again, if he's raising the tariff 25%, the price of that imported good is not going to necessarily go up 25%.
Okay, so it's going to go up 20, and the domestic stuff is going to go up 10 because they can.
Yeah. Well, if you have inelastic goods and elastic demand for elastic goods and inelastic goods, some goods might go up 5%, other goods might go up 25%. So it just depends on the elasticity of demand for those goods.
Okay, but
if there's lots of substitutes,
there aren't a lot of substitutes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of substitutes for agricultural products. We can get agricultural products from different nations, right?
I understand that, but I'm talking about focusing on the cars. That's what I did with my papers on it.
Well, you know, the thing with the cars, I'm not. If you're a Democrat and you want to tax, I mean, Democrats generally want to tax billionaires, right? So if you're going to put a 25% tax on a BMW or a Mercedes or a Ferrari, you know, I agree with the Democrats. Let's tax those billionaires.
Yeah, but it doesn't land there, because the fact that Mercedes has a competitor, say, in Cadillac. Now, whether or not the same, but they have a competitor in Cadillac.
Yeah, the Cadillac, GM will just raise the price.
That's what I'm saying.
Cadillac.
So you're not, what are you gaining? You're raising the price. In my opinion,
you know, who buys a Cadillac? Who buys a BMW? Who buys a Rolls-Royce?
It's going to raise the price of every single car. To raise the price of every single car.
Well, if a Tesla, suppose they roll out electric vehicle, that's, you know, something I can buy that I can afford, and I have a choice between that, which is, you know, built in the United States 100%, or a General Motors car, and I need one for commuting, I'm going to buy the Tesla. Right, so I think with cars that at their lower end, I you know, there's just so much competition there. I don't think you can just raise your prices.
No matter what you do, the money, the whatever $1 billion worth of auto tariffs there are is coming out of somebody's pocket.
Yeah.
And guess what? The somebody is you and me. So, you know, in my opinion, we'll see how it plays out. It'll be,
if I had my way, nobody would charge a tariff. There'd be no tariffs. Tax rates would be, you know, pushed. Maybe a value added tax. I've been coming around to this value added tax.
Oh God, you sound like my brother. No.
If there's only a value added tax at the federal level, I would support a 20% one, because the value added tax is a sales tax at every level of distribution.
You guys,
where when you collect it on behalf of somebody, you get to deduct that when you issue the check to the Treasury.
There's nothing wrong with our current tax. Well, there's a lot of stuff maybe wrong with it. There's nothing necessarily wrong with it if certain people didn't get favorable treatment. So,
well, there's something wrong with it when you got to spend all that money to comply with this law.
Well, that's because some people get favorable treatment and some don't.
Yeah. I mean, I like a value-added tax because the compliance cost for Joe Blow consumer is almost zero.
What if you were to say it costs you $5 for the widget, you sell it for $7, and it costs you $1 to pay people and all the stuff in the distribution system, your profit's $1, send me 30% of it. Tell me what's so complicated about that. What's so complicated about it is everybody has to have a bazillion different ways. Oh, wait a minute. It's not really $5 my cost. It's this. And what if I depreciate this? So the value added tax, you know, by the way, my brother was a CPA and everything else, president of PTI Securities, all around good guy. He's all for value added tax too. And you know what we fight about whenever we're in a car together? I say, Dan, you don't understand. The same people that have gamed which should have been a simple income tax calculation, are also going to find a way to game the value-added tax.
Well, I don't know about that, because they use it in Europe, but they use it in Europe with other taxes. In the United States, if it's at 20%, you collect taxes, you collect the VAT on behalf of the guy that sells you rubber, right? And then that amount you pay there is deducted when you have to issue the check for the tax that you have to pay on behalf of your customer, right? So because of that, the compliance, I think the compliance level is going to be a lot higher than the thing that I was advocating for, a transaction tax. With a transaction tax, I can see people trying to skate it. Or if you have a 20% consumption tax, 20% consumption tax, there'd be a lot of commerce driven underground.
You didn't because 20% is quite. You would have thought the sales tax couldn't be gamed, yet Amazon put themselves on the map gaming it, right?
Yeah, well, you got to pay sales tax now. They can't.
No, they don't.
I pay sales tax.
You do, and anything they handle.
Yeah.
If Kevin or somebody knows more about this than me, I still think that if you use Amazon or eBay to buy a camera from Joe's Camera in Sioux City, South Dakota, wherever else South Dakota or Sioux City is, I think that comes to you direct and you don't pay.
Oh, no, we use Amazon Prime a lot. We pay sales tax.
If Amazon handles it, I'm saying, but if it just comes direct mail or something else, I think they managed to get some wiggle on that, even though most of the stuff they handle now, you're correct.
Yeah. They put tax on it.
Okay, but I'm saying they didn't forever, and now I think they still escape on some of it.
Yeah. Well, they might be able to escape on some of it, but anytime we buy something on Amazon, my wife uses Amazon.
Yeah, now it's pretty much on there. I don't, my daughter uses it all. I don't use it. I bought one thing.
I use Amazon, and I use Walmart, and I go with the cheaper one.
Most of the time
it's Amazon, but sometimes you get better deals in Walmart.
I used the Amazon to buy one thing, and it sucked. And I've never bought anything done since.
Oh, I buy all of my automotive supplies from
you guys. You guys are believers. You know what can you say? I'm not.
Yeah.
When we first
the Mobile One oil, a 5-quart jar, plastic bottle of Mobile One oil is so much cheaper on Amazon than it is.
You know what? Whenever I actually shop online, which isn't all that much, I find everybody else just as cheap. Walmart, all the other guys are just as cheap.
Well, I do the comparison. I will put together my shopping list on Walmart.com.
You're going to die with Amazon flag over your coffin. I know that.
If it's auto parts, I'll go to AutoZone, and whoever's got the lowest price, I order it. And if it's free shipping, yeah, I'm in. Well, yeah, so it just depends.
Not saying anything bad about that. I'm just saying people become believers in these places, and I'm not. But
oh, Tom, I'm a 1,000-click shopper. I'm a 1,000-click shopper. If you were to do a Google shopping list on my laptop with the kind of clicks I do to get the best deal, and you do the same price search on a laptop where a guy is a 1-click shopper, I guarantee the prices that I'm going to see on my laptop are probably going to be lower, because that's what one thing that they monitor on Google Chrome is, how many times do you click before you pull a trigger, right? So the prices I'm going to be presented are going to be a little bit lower than the prices on a laptop of somebody who's a 1-click shopper.
I think I'm shifting to DuckDuckGo.
You are?
I keep saying that, and I never do. Hey, we're going to break. Our SP Futures down 22, and NASDAQ Futures down 69. We're not down as much as we were, but we're, after yesterday's huge turnaround, I'm kind of surprised we're down at all, but we are. You're right back, Stocks and Jack.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 23. NASDAQ Futures down 67. We've got the nothing crazy going on. We had Goldman Sachs down $4, Apple down $2. Nothing crazy. Dow futures down 252. We got Johnson & Johnson's down 660. That's a chunk. Remember, you got to multiply by 7 to see what it does to the Dow. Over in Europe, we've got these guys were down a bunch yesterday, so they kind of missed our rally at the end of the day. So they are the DAX is up 263. That's 1.1%. I think they were down 2 yesterday. FTSE up 63, 0.7%. CAC around up 63.8. So my guess is they're back about halfway. Over in Asia, remember the Nikkei was down like 4% yesterday. So I think they've a little bit of a bounce here today. My computer is sort of slow here, but the Nikkei's up 6. So I guess that's not much of a dead cat bounce there. Hang Seng up 87.4%. Shanghai up 12.4%. We've got bonds. 10-year down 8 basis points. 10-year's been sleeping down here. It's down to 4.15. The Bund down 6 basis points, 2.67. Japan unchanged, 1.49. Oil down 8 cents, 71.40, but pretty far over 70 here. It was 67 a few days ago, so that's a pretty big move. Brent down 9 cents, 74.68. We've got gold, which has been on a tear, is up another $14 today. 31.64, almost 3,200 here. Wow. Silver up 11 cents, 34.72. Copper up 3 cents, 5.06. Foreign exchange, the euro is below 108 now, so the dollar continues to get stronger. The British pound, 128, versus the dollar was basically 129, so it's slinking down a little bit too. The dollar continues to be fairly strong. Crypto, Bitcoin up 983, 83,769. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, the bulls, not as good as the thunder.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:41 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 36 degrees right now with a high of 45, increasing cloudiness and chilly today. It's going to be breezy this afternoon, and so is tonight, cloudy and windy tonight. Periods of rain and maybe a thunderstorm late with a low of 41 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 66 degrees right now with a high of 73. Sun in areas of high clouds and cooler. Breezy this afternoon. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 54 degrees. Let's talk about traffic real quick. Iman Kennedy from Monroe is looking at 30 minutes. 47 minutes, Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 42 minutes. Inbound Den Ryan from 95th, 19 minutes. Lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Den Ryan, 33 minutes. MLB yesterday, the Cubs destroy Athletics 18-3, and White Sox beat Twins 9-0. And just starting the season, you know, but Chicago teams are also a pretty okay start today. We got Diamondbacks at Yankees, 6:05 p.m., Twins at White Sox, 6:40 p.m., and Cubs at Athletics, 9:05 p.m. Yesterday, the Bulls lost to Thunder, 117-145. Today, we got Raptors playing at Bulls, 7 p.m., and Suns at Bucks, 6:30 p.m. Lastly, Avalanche at Blackhawks tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Yeah, well, how did the Athletics end up in Sacramento? You have any idea?
Athletics?
Yeah.
Didn't they? I thought they went to Las Vegas.
Well, they're supposed to be moving to Vegas. Then they were going to spend the last couple of years at Oakland, and then somehow or another that blew up. And
well, that Oakland Stadium is just, I mean, it looks like Soviet, high-level Soviet architecture. I mean, it's like every federal building that you look at on the outside.
Well, I'm you know.
It's a relic.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much you can do to it.
Okay, but I'm saying they're moving, and they were going to stay there till they till they moved, and then all of a sudden they evidently the things got so vicious between the fans and the owner. I thought they were going to go to redo the Las Vegas AAA stadium, make it bigger and pay there for a couple of years, and all of a sudden they go, yeah, the Cubs are flying to Sacramento, and I'm going, why Sacramento?
Are they going to do very well in Las Vegas? Because Las Vegas has professional sports everywhere. I was watching this volleyball, women's volleyball game over the weekend. It was in Vegas. I think the whole league is in Vegas.
They have the football team, but that's only 7 dates.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're up to 10 dates, I guess, with the exhibition. But baseball, I think they're building it right near where the Tropicana used to be, aren't they? It's pretty close to the Strip. I don't know. I mean, Las Vegas doesn't have 1 million people. Kind of, right? I first started going to Las Vegas, the whole state was like 400,000 people. Now it's 3 million or something.
Yeah, Vegas is... what is the population of Vegas?
You know, I just looked yesterday. I'll look again. I just looked yesterday. But I will look again for you. The
3 million.
Yeah. No. Nevada's 3 million. Vegas isn't 3 million, I don't think.
No, it says the AI on Google says the metropolitan area of Las Vegas.
Well, how big is the metropolitan area? It is that big? Wow. Let me look at the population history.
Well, I think people are moving in from California, honestly.
Well, I mean, it's like going to Phoenix with gambling.
Same hey, you weather. Know the best Vegas movie of all time, by the way? It's with Vince Vaughn and what's it called? We're Going to Vegas, Baby. Swingers. That's the best Vegas movie of all time, Swingers.
Really?
By far, yeah. It was made in the 1990s before, right after Vince Vaughn and the guy that played the nerdy guy in Rudy, Jim Favreau.
Okay.
It was made before they were like big stars. It's so good. I don't know if you've seen it.
Well, I like the TV show Vegas, and I think it was only on a year or two, and it's not in reruns because it didn't have 100 shows.
Huh.
Was the guy that was telling the guy who was telling
you might be able to find that on a streaming app. You know,
Dennis McCade. McCade?
Oh, he was good.
And he was the sheriff. And this was old Vegas when they were just starting to go out there.
Yeah.
And let's see, I started. When the hell did I start going to Vegas? 1970 something something. And I'm going to say, well, the whole state was not a million, so Vegas couldn't have been a million, right? 2000, they were 1.2 million. Let's go back further. Anyway, well, they couldn't have been. Like I said, the whole state wasn't a million, so they couldn't have been a million. It was old, and all of a sudden it got bigger and bigger all the time. And then in Henderson was a long drive with nothing between Vegas and Henderson. Now it's all populated.
You know, Audrey is really into. She does the. She's a realtor. Does she flip at all?
She had a couple people that used to do that. She had guys. Yeah. You know, she found a place, but now after many years of doing it, one guy just retired. But these were dudes that. You know, a couple of guys were firemen. Man, they would go into a place and within 3-4 months, you couldn't recognize the place, and they made money every single time.
Well, there's a guy had a show in Vegas about flipping. I think it was called Flipping Vegas. And on the very first season, he was able to buy a bunch of properties for like $40,000 distressed properties. He put about $20,000 into them, and then he'd sell them for $140,000, right? But he drove around Vegas in a customized Lamborghini, and he has a show. By the fourth show, or the fourth season, everybody's bidding on these. I mean, he's just drawn attention to this, right? He's making all kinds of money. This is the last thing you want to do is advertise that your occupation, your business is really profitable. I mean, really profitable. And so by the fourth or fifth season, he has to go out to Henderson, Nevada, to renovate properties because there's nothing left. All the prices have been bid up on these distressed properties because one or two guys at the auction when he first starts the show, by the fourth or fifth season, there's like 10 guys at these auctions, and he can't get them for these bargain basement prices anymore. And so the show ended after like season 5. It was really good. It was a really good show. It was, you know, typical show where they invent drama, right, between the wife and the husband.
You don't have to invent drama. It's usually there.
He had to go out to Henderson to find some properties for a show. That's how bad it got.
Well, Henderson is not that far. It's like halfway between there and Hoover Dam.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're driving in 120 degree heat, the Hoover Dam is a long way.
It's a ways, oh yeah.
Oh, even with the air conditioner on, that's a long drive in that 120 degree heat.
It can be pretty bad. You know what they had when it got so hot last summer, they were breaking the records last summer or the year before. You know which were the first, the most emergency room visits.
What's that?
Of what people's biggest problem was with the your feet. People walk outside on the asphalt and burn the bottom of their feet.
Yeah.
In 1970, population was 125,000 people.
Mm.
No, wait a minute. That's not. What am I looking at? I'll find it here. I don't know why I'm struggling here with the...
Hey, by the way, on Twitter, there's a Pelosi versus inverse Kramer. So oh, people yeah. are trading against Kramer.
Yeah, where do people where do people get that stuff? Because my nephew follows some site that has everybody.
Yeah, well, apparently Pelosi's up 54%.
God.
And inverse Kramer is up 43%. So if you trade opposite of Kramer. So I made a comment on Twitter that I was like, I asked the question. I shared this tweet and I asked the question. Is Kramer a Treasury G-man whose job is to generate a population of people who buy when the connected people like Pelosi want to sell?
1982, when did I start going out there? 1978, population of Vegas was 389,000.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I remember going to Seattle in the 80s before my parents got divorced, and Seattle was nothing. And, you know, I drive there now, and I can't believe how dense it is. I mean, the all the people moving in just kind of ruined Seattle. It was a really cool medium-sized city in the 80s. I mean, it's really cool. And it was really safe downtown, too.
Well, you didn't listen, again, what Bill and I have been talking about. It started with the... he started coming on, well, we talk about basketball, but the damage during the hurricane and the roads and how people put that back together and who you have to deal with and where the money comes in. And because Bill did all that. Not, he wasn't so much highways. He was his civil engineering thing. Somehow he got into the water treatment plants and stuff early on, where you get water from. So he's an encyclopedia and all that stuff. And now he's down in Austin, Texas, he lives, because I guess that was his last place he did, and he just liked it down there. But he's talking about all these places that the water is the biggest deal now. He sent me something yesterday. They were in Austin. They withheld building permits from people saying, you can't build. We don't have any water. And it's I mean, Vegas.
Salt Lake has the same issue.
Well, yeah, it's, but I mean, Vegas doesn't have any water. Unless the stuff where they have some that they can corral, but it does rain there sometimes. But basically, they get it from Lake Mead. Well, Lake Mead is sinking. It's come back a little bit, but it's kind of sinking. I mean, Phoenix, Denver, I remember Denver having water issues in 1980, and now they've got to be four times as big, and they don't have any more water.
Well, if you look at where the airport is in Denver, they expected Denver to get much larger, because when you go from downtown Denver out to that airport, it feels like you're going to Nebraska. That's how much growth they expected in Denver. It's nuts. I mean, there's like an occasional subdivision.
Yeah, there's nothing out there.
But the growth they were expecting never came.
Well, I mean, they don't have... They were worried about having a zero growth philosophy in 1980, 1990.
Well, and whoever built that airport really overestimated the population.
Oh, God, yeah.
My goodness, it's way out there. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but
I have. It's a 40-mile drive near the city.
It's nuts. Yeah, and they got this turnpike that's supposed to get you there quicker that we never took. And we used to fly out of there quite often because we could drive our van to Denver or to suburb north of Denver, park it at my niece's apartment, and then take a cab to the Denver airport and fly to New York. For like $1,000. If we did that out of Salt Lake, it was like, I don't know, $1,800. So we would occasionally drive to Denver, hang out with my niece for a while, for a couple days, and then fly to New York and stay for a month.
All the hotels used to be lined up where Stapleton was, the old airport.
Yeah, was more downtown, right?
Well, I mean, no, it was a lot closer, but last time I flew out of the other one, you know, when I was on the SIBO, it was a while ago. All the hotels were still there. They never moved out to the new place.
Yeah, yeah. So, the Vegas airport is really interesting because it is almost on the Strip.
It's right behind the Tropicana.
Yeah, it's right there on the Strip. Well, it's really crazy how close it is.
But it was the Tropicana was the last place on the Strip.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first started going out there, the airport was the end of the world down there.
Yeah.
But anyway, we have. Are you long or short the market? I mean, some of the stuff that I think is happening, I think some people have not noticed the change. I mean, I'm stunned that the people who voted for Trump are seeing a different guy. I mean, they voted for him because they wanted the first Trump. Eye on the market, eye on inflation. Well, yeah. now they're getting they got a totally different guy. I don't know how happy they are. I'm sure there's
well,
they're
last still night was you may not agree with this, but last night when he signed that executive order, like banning scalping, I was like, banning scalping? What are you talking about?
Hell, the dude is a dictator. If he doesn't like it, he writes an order saying you can't do it. If he likes somebody, he pardons him. It's scary.
Yeah, this whole anti-scalping thing is just ridiculous. I mean, you know, the scalpers don't always win. Like the scalpers at the Washington State Oklahoma Rose Bowl. One of the reasons why I think the Rose Bowl was empty that day. Well, we lost our coach to Alabama, Mike Price. But you know, Mike Price comes back. There's not a lot of excitement for on the Washington State side. I think the OU fans outnumbered the Washington State fans. But the scalpers got crushed. They were hoping to sell these tickets for like $150, maybe $200, and they got crushed. So the scalpers don't always.
How does a scalper even operate in an era where there's no tickets?
Yeah. Well, no, they buy up all these. Because at a bowl game, each university has to purchase an X amount, right? So there's always going to be the tickets that they sell to the general public. So the scalpers were expecting a sellout. And so they bought a bunch of tickets.
Okay, I don't want to ask the president this because I know he wouldn't know. What define a scalper?
To me, a scalper, the reason why scalping exists is because people who are selling tickets are selling them below market price. And so somebody buys them up and they find buyers willing to pay a higher price. I mean, there's nothing wrong with buying a ticket for $40 for the Ohio State football game and then finding some guy, in my opinion, he's willing to pay $500 for it. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, who's getting hurt by that? Nobody.
Well,
the guy that wanted to go to the game can't because all the alumni get to buy these tickets at really low prices. So that fills seats. That makes it very difficult for a guy that isn't alumni to go to the game. So he just finds some guy that has access to cheap tickets and it says, hey, I'll buy it from you for $500. I don't see where the harm is.
What about the people who get them right from the right out of the gate? From the people who sell them, when was The Godfather written? Like 1971, 72.
Yeah.
And the first chapter is a thing about scalping tickets.
Yeah.
And then they would say, was it Johnny Fontaine or somebody was going to say, what's her name? Who's Kelsey's girlfriend? The most famous girl on earth now. Tell us her name. Blonde. I'm going brain dead. We just had a huge tour, made a gazillion dollars.
Oh, Taylor Swift?
Yeah. Well, yeah. My buddies used to go to every concert there was, right? And they were always waiting.
I used to go to a lot of them, too, yeah.
Wait in line for overnight, for a day, smoking dope, God knows whatever you're doing. And they could never get the front 10 rows. Who the hell got there ahead of me? I was first guy in line. Well, they would sell those to their own people, known as a scalper. Now, that's a different definition of scalper. You know the first 10 rows are worth more than the $30 for the ticket, so you get to those guys for $30, they sell them for $300 and you split it with them. Now, that's a different type of scalper, right? We're not talking about a guy going in the hotel room in the morning, sees who hung over, buys a ticket from a Notre Dame game for $50, and goes out on the street and sees people pulling up and says, I'll sell you to you for $70. But how do you do any of that without a ticket?
I bought four tickets through the Washington State University ticket office when I was a graduate student at Washington State for the Notre Dame game, and two of my Navy buddies backed out. So Sean and I, my one Navy buddy that went with me, he picked me up at the airport. We went to the game, and I had the four tickets, so I sold two of them to Notre Dame fans for like, I don't remember, like $200 a piece. We're in the end zone where the kicker missed the field goal in overtime.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I don't know if you remember that game.
I think so.
Washington State had a big lead in the fourth quarter. And the Notre Dame fans that bought the two tickets from me were sitting right next to us. They left the game because they thought the game was over. And then we stayed and we watched that kick that was coming right at us. All of a sudden, luck of the Irish, it just drifted like 15 yards and he missed it.
Well, when
but
I was...
I sold those tickets to pay for my trip.
When I was young, I went to every bowl game.
Yeah,
I never once went with a ticket. I was balling outside. I never got a bad seat. I never paid face price.
But now, Kid Rock, he's in the president's Oval Office last night, and he says, I want my fans, the guy that doesn't have any money, to be able to come to my shows. Well, I guarantee if there's no scalping, who's probably buying those tickets and then selling them?
He's probably the biggest one of the scalpers.
Yeah. the guy that wants to go to a show, he might buy them for $25.
All right, you guys, real high-end dudes like you and Ricky, yeah. I would never go and have to give my phone number to some guy to get. I want. That's why I don't do this anymore. I want a regular ticket. In the age of no tickets, how do you be a scalper?
Yeah.
Well, how do you?
I just think, you know, if you don't want scalping, charge the market price.
I understand it, but how? I'm asking, how is it done logistically? Somebody somehow gets 50 tickets on their phone. How do they do that?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
And I'm going to give this guy.
They might have a bunch of bank accounts and.
You know what I'm saying? Do I want
to? If a guy wants to buy 50 tickets, who cares?
I understand that, but if now I don't want to give this guy my phone number to get the ticket.
Yeah.
Right? Would you?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
But I got to believe the scalping business is not so good unless they figured out a way.
Well, you know, I think scalpers. See, this is the problem with viewing a problem from like just today's perspective. The guy doing this doesn't want to end up in jail. He doesn't want to rip people off. He wants to buy a bunch of tickets at whatever the price the show is selling them for. And then he puts them on a market, and he sells them. And I don't think he wants to rip anybody off because he wants to be able to do this for 20 years. So to me, it's just a non-issue. And for the president to sign an order,
if it's a law, okay, he can't make a law. Now he has an order. Does that mean if somebody's scalping, there's a jail term or a fine associated with it?
It's a law in the sense that it'll be on the books until the next guy comes in.
But I'm saying there's no, he can't impose a fine. He can't appoint a prisoner. He can't make a law.
Yeah.
Does he even know that?
Maybe if the transaction occurs across state lines, then maybe the feds can do something with it.
But even so, it has to be a law.
Yeah. I think it was just window dressing. It was virtue signaling. I don't think it's going to have any effect, but just to do it, just to me is. I mean, it was. I couldn't believe he was doing that.
The
last
term
night.
Is out of control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
he's not running again. This is his
last
term.
Sure about
term.
That?
Well, you know, the funny thing you bring that up. You know, last week we had the Snapchat or Gate or whatever it was called. The conversation that the American or Atlantic editor was involved in, he was pulled into this Snap group chat. I think it was Snap.
Yeah.
Signal. So we had Signalgate last week. Well, you know, Trump's not he's a pretty savvy media guy. So what does he do? He says he's going to run for a third term, right? He floats the idea of him running for a third term. Now all the media, they kind of dropped the Signalgate thing, and now they're covering this. He's going to run for a third term. And then I think he's just outsmarting the media. Then he says, well, I'd like to run against Obama. Let Obama run for a third term. He just is really good with the media.
Well, I mean,
he can stop a story on a dime.
The media is, we don't know how skilled they are these days. But anyway,
yeah, I don't think they're very bright. Honestly.
No, what do you say? We're over time, bud. Thank you. SP Futures only down 14. NASDAQ is down 41. We probably will recover just like we did yesterday. We'll see. We'll talk about it tomorrow
morning.
Go
long. Go long.
Go long. There you go.
Money. Yep.
That's all, folks.